sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Political horseplay is spooking markets. Earnings season's around the corner, starts next week, actually, and stock rumors have gone wild. We have a guest with us today. We're going to change it up a little bit. Talk with Howard Dvorkin. He is with Consolidated Credit. And I have some stocks to talk about and all about what's going on with the eco that may or may not be here. A lot more on episode number 333 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, welcome aboard. Andrew Horowitz here. And we are now in October 2013 talking about, what do we talk about? Well, we talk about markets, finances, and all the things in between. So happy you could join me. Had a great weekend. I went up to the lake house and spent some time, well, doing a lot of work, actually. Seems that the lake where I live up in Lake Placid, Florida, I have a place up there. There is a, it's either you have water in the lake or you don't have water in the lake. There's no happy medium. It's a big lake, 2 miles by 4 miles, 60 feet in the center. But I got to tell you something, it was way up there and covered most of the beach that we have. But it's good. We need the water. But the funny thing that happened this weekend is I was kind of on the jet ski doing my thing and kind of made a little more of a turn than I should have. And I was like boomeranged or just shot like a cannon off the back end of the jet ski. And it was kind of crazy to know what was going on. It was a lot of fun, though. Water was warm and no gators. So that was good. Hopefully that things are going well with you. We have a lot to talk about, a lot of confusion going on with what's happening with the markets with relation to the government and whatever is going on there. We'll talk about some of the things that they're talking about, but it's really not even worthwhile getting into the depths of it because they'll just change their mind. So we'll know when we'll know. In the meantime, we have to prepare for a lot of different things because we have some dates coming up. We have October 17th, which is the supposed date that the debt ceiling and all the money runs out, and they have to make a plan to fund the government and to pay the debts after that date and what happens then. Looks like the Republicans pulled a nice little card here where they said that they're not going to allow for the U.S. to default. And what that really was a way for them to get more time on this budget deal. Because if there was a chance that they would even allow for a default and not raising the debt ceiling, then there would be a lot more mess going on right now because that's the biggest concern that we have. But what they did was they put a little bit of a net underneath it so that they can continue with their moving into all sorts of areas of Obamacare and trying to, you know, get away with basically holding hostage the budget until this gets done, whatever their liking is, whether it's to, if they would like, get rid of Obamacare to begin with, or maybe even just cut out some of the parts, or maybe go into repealing of the tax on devices. So there's a lot of moving parts that are going on with this right now. And like I said, it's important to understand what's going on, but it changes so rapidly and it's so fluid that who knows? I thought they would have had something done already. But one of the byproducts of this is that we have a lot of government workers that are being furloughed. And there was already a bill passed that a part of the grouping that was furloughed will actually get back pay. So they're on vacation, essentially. And at the same time, we're seeing things like the unemployment report that was due last Friday from the Bureau of Labor Statistics wasn't actually released. And we'll probably see it sometime this week, maybe. It's funny because I looked at the list of economic indicators that are actually coming out this week. And the first one on the list is the employment data, the unemployment rate, all that. And the date range was the entire week. Usually you have just the date and the time. Nope, this time it was the entire week. So in other words, they don't know when it's coming out. And it'll stay in that kind of mode until they know a little bit more. We're going to talk with Howard Dvorkin soon. I want to talk to him because I want to get a little handle on the state of credit. You know, we're seeing that there's two sides of it. We're seeing that you have the housing market, where some areas are very, very liquid and houses are selling very well. And then you have other areas that it's very difficult to get a loan and they're having a lot of problems. So what I wanted to do is get someone who is in the trenches with the whole area of credit from the consumer standpoint and talk with him about what is going on as he sees it. So we'll get to that in a little while. I want to talk about, let's kind of start off with what's going on. Next week does start earnings season. And we know that because the official, quote unquote, stock that kicks it all off is Alcoa. And Alcoa will be coming out on the 8th after the close of the market. Estimates of about 5 cents per share. And already estimates are being marked down. And I joke about this with John Dvorak. I talk about how, you know, Alcoa, what they do is they run up into earnings and disappoint and come back down after earnings. And this kind of gyration with their price goes on and on and on. Yum Brands will also be coming out after the market on the 8th. That's Tuesday. And looking for about 92 cents. One of the things that we've seen with Yum Brands, obviously, is that in China, there has been a real scare related to this whole bird flu issue. And they've taken it to such extremes that they're not eating the chicken, even at the Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is Yum Brands. And that is a tremendous component of Yum Brands' earnings. And we saw that McDonald's were slowing down a bit in China. And we saw that Yum Brands has just terrible month-over-month numbers when it comes to China. They're getting better, so maybe that's good for somebody. But they were down 10%, 17%, down 15%. I mean, you go back and back and back. It's a pretty rough number that they're looking at. We also have coming up some retail. We have Family Dollar stores on the 9th before the market. We have Costco before the market on the 9th also. And then we're going to have, on the 11th, J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo. We're looking for about $1.32 on J.P. Morgan and 97 cents for Wells Fargo. And I am certain that they will be nowhere near those numbers, and then we got to spend days figuring out what the heck is going on. Now, J.P. Morgan, which may have an $11 billion settlement on their hands, or more or less, that's going to be a weird number because who knows if they booked part of it already, if they're going to project it out into the future and use that as a guidance number, or how that's really going to affect things for them. So we're going to watch that because the banks have been doing pretty good with their ability to take very low interest rates that are given to them or granted to them from the Fed and turning it into a nice profit. Now, what's also great about what's happening with the banks right now is that they've had, well, they had for a few months, a steepening yield curve where the lowest yield, the shorter term maturities were much lower on a gap basis, basically the width of that, of the gap between the short term and the long term. And that's good for them because they borrow money on the short term and they lend money out on the long term, so they're able to grab the money very cheaply, send it out, and what does that do? Well, they get the spread on that. So they could do that all day long, and that's one of the reasons why the Fed wants to keep rates low. Now, we're also going to see economic news. Now, this is a pretty big week for economic news. One of the things we have, again, is maybe employment, but we're also going to see factory orders. We're also going to be seeing, potentially, there's a lot of potential on this list, the trade balance. Now, the things that I'm looking for, though, we have, again, mortgage applications, which have been falling slightly. We also have wholesale inventories. Now, the inventory numbers conflict with the ISM number, and that's a bit confusing because we saw that there was a good ISM manufacturing number, I guess it was the beginning of last week. And we're also seeing that there has been a spike in some things like the Philly Fed. And that is saying that manufacturing is on the upswing. But at the same time, the month before, we saw that there was a tremendous amount of factory orders that were kind of coming down very significantly because manufacturing wasn't happening, because buying wasn't happening. And therefore, you have to wonder how all of a sudden, in 1 month, did we get this big kick up in the ISM? Now, we also saw the ISM services. Now, this is a really interesting number because that came out about 3 points lower than expectations, and probably one of the lowest readings we've seen in many months. And the services number is much more related to the consumer. And as the consumer makes up about 70% of the U.S. economy, that's something that you really have to think about, what's going on there. Consumer confidence has been coming down a bit. Wage growth has been flat, of course. But at this point, you have to think that maybe some of the things that have gone on, the slowdown in China and the fact that interest rates were on the rise, and you saw that there was a drop in consumer confidence, and even this whole political wrangling that's going on, maybe there's something to be said about that, and consumers are slowing down a bit. At the same time, we have seen prices gone up, you know, a tremendous amount at things like restaurants and a variety of other service establishments. And maybe that's causing a little bit of a problem these days. Maybe consumers are saying, hey, you know what? I'm not paying this. I'm just not going to pay this. That actually did, in fact, cause the markets to drop last Thursday, only to see a rebound on Friday with no news in the cycle because the only thing that was coming out was the unemployment rate. Now, one of the things you saw was that the leaders of the market, quote-unquote leaders of the market, are still holding up pretty well, and that's a good thing. There is a concept that if your leaders can hold up and they're not breaking down, and maybe some of the laggards are breaking down and there's a bit of a mix otherwise, that's a good thing because the leaders are where the money's going into. But one of the things we have seen is that a lot of money is going into the large cap, the big boys, you know, the Amazons, Priceline, even Microsoft, Apple, although Apple's been moving around a bit. But, you know, the old stalwarts, the big names. One of the things you also saw was that the Dow Jones has had 2 weeks in a row down now. And they couldn't recover on Friday after that sell-off during the week. But you could see that the buyers have an itchy finger, it seems, to do something once the information is known about whatever they're going to agree to or finally disagree to in Washington. Because every time we see some kind of a headline that comes out, there is a lot of movement. I would say just ignore that right now. Find the stocks that you really like from a fundamental and a technical basis and, you know, kind of run with those right now. And, you know, just be small, they say. You know, I'm gonna invest small. Don't hold full positions in the portfolio when we're seeing the kind of breakdown that we're seeing. And we're seeing that in general, there is some selling in a variety of names. Of course, the other thing is true that we talk about, which is even though there is selling, it seems that a day later or 2 days later, they just buy back in. I could tell you a bunch of stocks that just dropped off pretty well and all of a sudden turned around. As a matter of fact, two of them I'll mention. Remember, I think it was about two and a half weeks ago, we talked about a stock called HomeAway. And I wrote a big piece on it and the whole thesis of what is going on with that stock and where the problems lie. And it's a good company, good concept, but some of the problems that they're having with fraud and the lack of, total vetting of the customers who were the owners who are putting their properties on the site. And then that turns into a problem where you have people then looking to, you know, put up fake houses up there, fake rentals, and then people getting suckered. And there was a lot of other little things there, too, that really haven't come out, I talked about. And, the stock dropped pretty well. As a matter of fact, we covered our position in it. I think I told you about that last week. And sat on the sidelines and kind of came down a little bit, came up. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's this rumor. And I think this is actually crazy. You tell me what you think. There's a rumor that Priceline was a great fit and a great potential to buy this company. I'm thinking, why would Priceline? Where's the fit? You could think of 100 companies that are similar in terms of, okay, they're internet-based. They have something to do with selling to the consumer. I mean, Amazon could buy it for that matter. eBay could buy it for that matter. Why is it Priceline? Why? Because Priceline has a good amount of cash and their stock price is so high and people are looking for them to do something. And, the thought is, wow, Priceline really went up in value. And this could be, you know, something they could easily absorb. They have some cash they could do it with, or they could do it with debt. And if they do it with debt, it's going to be, quote-unquote, slightly accretive starting in about a year. If they do it with cash, it'll be accretive by 1% to earnings almost immediately. But again, I just don't understand the fit. Maybe I'm missing something. And maybe you fly your plane to a vacation house somewhere and you fly into a Priceline and maybe because they have hotels also. I don't know. I don't really understand the whole rationale of that. But nonetheless, the stock did react very significantly to that. It was up about... I guess it was about 12% out of nowhere. Just shot right up on that rumor. And all it was a rumor and some piece that was written in a blog somewhere. And then it followed through with about a 2-3% move to the upside. Now, we did, in fact, reshort a small position of that towards the end of the week after that big run for our clients. And I would share with you that, obviously you got to keep this tight. Anything can happen. The rumor could be true. But the fact of the matter is that it seems a little bit far-fetched and people are actively looking for an excuse to run up a name. Same thing happened with Outerwall. This is the old Redbox. Remember them? Coinstar? Changed their name to Outerwall, which has, I don't know what the meaning of that is. I mean, at least Coinstar was when they had the coins and all that. And you kind of knew that. All right, then they had Redbox. They put it together. Outerwall. It sounds like, they make fortresses or bunkers or something. But anyway, the stock reacted after there was a discussion that one of the major hedge funds that owns about 6 or 7% of it said that, hey, there's great breakup value here because they have different components of their business. They have a kind of a vending business where there's a standalone vending machine, just like the Redbox, but with coffee and maybe some food, I think. And then there's the coin business, which I'm not sure what that is in terms of revenue. And then they got the Redbox. And you got to wonder, how long is the Redbox going to be here if every cable company now has video on demand, and you have Hulu, and you have Netflix, and who is buying DVDs or renting them? I don't care how cheap they are. You can basically get the same thing on any of the major services. You go to the iTunes store, you can get it there, you can get it at Netflix, you can get it. I mean, there's just plenty of places, Amazon, plenty of places to get movies, so I don't exactly understand how that model is necessarily going to survive. But the stock did move about 9.5% on Friday afternoon and then 6% after hours. Anyway, I got to do a little bit of a U-turn here. Let me just finish something off. I'm sorry. I kind of went around in circles there for a second. I just want to mention also we have import prices coming up at the end of the week, PPI and real estate, retail sales. That's what I was kind of getting at with the I was talking about the ISM. The retail sales are going to be kind of interesting to take a look at. The fact is that this is something in coordination with the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence that we're going to see the same day on the 11th. There is a view that the Michigan Confidence Index will drop to 76. Last period was 77. And retail sales look like they're going to be pretty much in line with what we've been seeing, although a slight uptick. If you take out out auto and gas, you got about a 0.3% estimate, and it was 0.1 prior. I want to talk to you also about some. There are some funny things that happened last week, but let's get to our guest, and we'll talk about a couple of stocks. One that was up about 600%. Great story. I want to talk to you about Tesla as well. I think there was something very interesting that I found in there, and something that that a lot of companies should take a lesson from, but. Let's get to this discussion first, and then I'll tell you about that. And stick around, because I got to tell you about the webinar we're having on, I believe it's Tuesday, we're having one, so you got to pay attention to that. How about we get to our guest? We have a great guest today, Howard Dvorkin, who is the founder of Consolidated Credit Counseling Services. He's the author of the book, Credit Hell, How to Dig Yourself Out of Debt, and a new book coming out called Power Up. So, Howard, I thought we would change it up a little bit, talk a little bit more about some basic things today, and I think you're the guy to talk about credit, right?
Well, I've been known to speak about that over the past couple of years, but I'll tell you, regardless of your financial situation, credit always pops up, whether it's with you personally or people you know or even your family members. So it's always good to have a good working knowledge of the credit markets, and now, if you find yourself in debt, how to get out.
You know, one of the things that's interesting is that different cultures around the world have different feelings and outlook and the societal norms in terms of credit, right? We're all about credit here.
We are all about credit, and it's interesting because we at Consolidated Credit have offices in Canada and in the UK, and each one has its own nuances and the way people look at credit. Some people take it very seriously. Some people are more nonchalant. Let's assume America is addicted to credit. Mm-hmm. Our addiction is coming over to the our Canadian brethren, and as such, they're starting to do the same things we did over the last 15 years, and I'm seeing that develop over time. With regards to the UK, our London office gets a lot of calls. It's a lot of small debt, and they have different rules regarding credit, meaning anybody can file for help and receive help at any amount. So it's not insurmountable debt that drives people into that office. But then you go to other places, Greece, Italy, they don't even care. They'll run it up and not pay, which is unfortunate. So every society has a different way of handling
debt. We know about Greek and Italy and about Portugal, what happens there when they do it. But you know, it's interesting because if we could just for a moment think about how the westernization of many of the emerging markets and other markets around the world have pretty much caused major havoc. I mean, look at about we look at India, we look at China, the highest diabetes rates in the world because they've, you know, become more accustomed to a Western diet. So it's not necessarily good that we're bringing over our, you know, our ways over there.
Well, not only do we export our good stuff, we also export our bad stuff.
Right, exactly. So let me talk to you a little bit about the housing market. I know you had a lot of focus on that back in the day when things were really getting crazy. And now we're seeing that we're in a low interest rate environment, and we have, you know, probably the lowest that I can recall in my lifetime, at least in terms of rates for mortgages, et cetera. Do you see the situation being cleaned up now, or is there still a lot of people that are really underwater, problematic? I mean, how's this all working out?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we heard of all these great programs that were available to help people out of debt. In 2011, 2012, we helped 65% of the people that filed foreclosures that had foreclosures in the state of Florida came through our office. So we were very busy. The problem was there was no programs. There was very little help that could be given to these people. Now we're in an upswing on the housing market, and now those dollars that we all heard about that were great for headlines are now being released. There are still a lot of people that are in trouble behind on their mortgages, and now they're getting help. And even programs where the government is giving $50,000 to people that are in trouble, or $50,000 for people to buy new houses. It's amazing the programs that are out there. Too late, though. So, but we are extremely busy at Consolidated Credit in all our offices.
Now, so one of the things, they obviously got some great headlines, like you said. I mean, that's what they're all after, was the whole political gain, which seems to be the big game that's being played all the time. But on the other side of the coin, you know, we talk about how this is what really burns me. You know, we have a situation where we have a housing market that imploded. It was all based on the credit and issues of that. Of course, now a lot of that has been somewhat changed. Banks are being a little bit more restrictive, a lot more restrictive in some circumstances. But what I really think is kind of fascinating is that credit cards are still legally oftentimes like 20%, or those deals where you have a 1 year free, you don't have to pay anything, no interest, no payments at all, and then you miss 1 month, and then you're just, the whole thing, you know, compresses, and you do all of it plus a 20% surcharge and things. How are they getting away? Seriously, how do they get away with this? Because I think it's bordering on criminal.
Well, it's not criminal. I mean, let's face it. The banks have huge lobbyists around in every state and in Washington, and they're writing the laws. With the free interest, you know, buyer beware. Nothing in the credit world is free. Nothing. It'll come back and bite you. The reason why they give that offer to you, because they know a certain amount, a large amount of people will take them up on the no interest for a year, but then end up having to pay all that interest back when they can't come up with a lump sum payment. In my book, Power Up, I talk about this at length, and it's a very interesting conversation when talking to these lenders, because they know statistically how many people are not going to fulfill paying off the loan before the interest kicks in and you get back charged. And normally the interest rates are very high. With regards to, you know, freebies, nothing in the world is free, except with this housing program that we've seen. I've seen people who have had they have a $900,000 home that have gone through and gotten a letter in the mail that's unsolicited that says, we're doing away with your second mortgage. Congratulations, we're walking away from $200,000. And the reason why is they stopped paying the bill. So they are being rewarded for not paying their mortgage. They're being rewarded for bad behavior. And guess what? That money is coming from our pockets. Our tax dollars is contributing to that.
But this is a global epidemic. You know, you can relate the same thing to Greece. Greece does all sorts of bad things. Portugal, they overbuild like crazy. We give them money. And when they say they're going to actually do a lot of work to make sure that they can pay it back, and they restructure and they work on their whole entire infrastructure, and then they still miss payments, they let them go by, because at the end of the day, you know, yes, I know it's good for all of us. We don't want any failures. But, you know, sometimes there's something to be said about a forest burning to the ground and, you know, letting growth out of the leftover come. And that's where you get stronger. We're not creating that. We're creating a society and mentally of essentially allowing, the bad deeds to go unpunished. And then from there, we essentially are punishing the people that did the right thing. And it's just, I don't know, it seems like we're going to one day walk into this all over again.
Oh, we're absolutely going to walk into this all over again. I mean, I see our phone traffic in our call centers, it's picking up. And that means people are spending more and getting themselves in trouble. And unfortunately, consumers don't learn their lesson the first time, maybe not even the second or third time. Unfortunately, we're going to see that consumer debt is going to rise over the next couple of years, and they may end up hitting a wall like they did before. We're a consumer-driven economy.
Yeah, and when we are, and when we see that, you know, consumer confidence has been, you know, holding up pretty well, but questionable in terms of the levels of what we could be seeing, and an economy that's just, you know, kind of slowly shrugging along. But let's talk about some credit issues here, and I really want to. I don't think we've ever talked about this on the show. What are some of the things that people can do? And I'm talking now to my more the younger audience a bit, and maybe even the older. But you know, a lot of people talk about when I was growing up, it was like, okay, what are you going to do? Well, the first thing you do when you turn 18 is you get yourself a Sears credit card. That's what I was told. I'm like, okay.
Mine was JCPenney, but okay.
Okay, right. You know, the first thing you do, you go out and you get that credit card, because then you establish credit for yourself, you know? Now they have different ways of doing it, right? They have like a deal where you can get a credit card and put money behind it or something like that. It's essentially a debit card with guarantees. But what are some of the ways that people can work on establishing credit?
I mean, people could go through, they could do a bunch of different things. Let's face it. There are lenders in this country that will offer kids in high school a credit card. These mm-hmm. are kids without jobs, to get them hooked. And the sticking rate on something like that is very, very strong. So, you know, when the typical rate of somebody holding on to their credit cards is about 4 years. If you get them in school, maybe even put their school on there, or in college, the sticking rate jumps up to about 15 years, because that's a piece of your history. That's a piece of your life. You don't want to give that up. Mm-hmm. So they're giving credit cards to anybody. And we saw a slowdown, a significant curtailment of that over the last 6 or 7 years because of the financial crisis. But we're starting to see those offers coming out more and more. Unfortunately, that's going to get people in trouble. Yes, there are secured credit cards out there where you put money in and then you can charge up to that amount. There's also debit cards. Go out. The problem with debit cards, or one drawback, is that they don't report to the credit bureaus, because all you're doing is debiting your bank account. There's no real extension of credit. You can go out, get a car loan, but you may have to have a cosigner to start with, but you're still building credit, and also the department stores, which you said. But you have to be careful of the department stores, because they're going to charge you typically a higher rate of interest, and that could get you in trouble. The key is, open up a credit card. When the bill comes in, pay it off. Never run a balance so you don't get yourself in trouble and so you don't end up having to call Consolidated Credit Counseling to get you out of trouble.
Yeah. Now, one thing that we do is, you know, a lot of people I know and they utilize the credit cards primarily, obviously, to pay for things, and they use it as a the old, what we call the charge card. It used to be called a charge card and a credit card. Remember that, the differential, right?
Yes.
And American Express would be an example of what a charge card would be, and MasterCard Visa would be a credit card. One, you would have the ability to pretty much take 30 days and pay off your bill, and the other one would be you have to pay it off sometime over your lifetime, as long as you don't hit the max. And there's a lot of these deals out there where you can get airline credit, hotel credit, you know, frequent flyer miles and all that. Are there any drawbacks to having a lot of these cards outstanding? So there's been talk I've heard, and you know, people say, hey, you know what? You have, I don't know, I was picking a number, you know, 10 cards, 20 cards, 30 cards that you put out, you know, that you have currently open. Is that a negative on your credit rating?
Well, that can be. You're scored in a number of ways. The FICO model, which is Fair Isaac and Company, came up with a scoring method, and it penalizes you if you have too many cards in your name and if you have too many inquiries. For every inquiry, every time you go to get credit, that reduces your score by 4 points. Additionally, if you have too much available to you, that can also negatively affect you. So you have to be very cognizant. Nobody needs 10 credit cards. Nobody needs to have different payments showing up in balances of, you know, to run balances, truthfully. I mean, unfortunately, in today's society, we're told that we have to have things, and we're told we're supposed to live a certain way. And unfortunately, how do we do that when we can't afford it? We put it on the credit cards, thus we're financing a lifestyle that we can't afford.
And, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as I can't afford it anymore.
Well, right? Eventually, some people, for some people, yes, and for some people, they can't make the credit card payments. That's when they hit the brick wall.
Right, and then they go to somebody like you, right? And you do your magic, whatever it is, and then they just do it again. How many times do you meet how many times do you meet serial card? You know, people that are just racking up their credit cards. I have clients that say to me, Andrew, do me a favor. Send $25,000. You know, I'm like, all right, what's up? Listen, I got to tell you, you know, I'm embarrassed, but you know, I ran up some credit card bills and all. Okay, never going to do it again. Great. And then, honestly, a year later, 2 years later, I get the same call, and I say to him, you know what? Do me a favor, leave the credit on the card. Your punishment is that you have to pay that horrendous interest rate, and this way, you won't be able to ring up more on that card. Why bother? Why pay 15% over there when you could be earning, you know, X amount over here? Or there must be a good chunk of serial credit card.
Absolutely, there are. I mean, I wouldn't say all of the people, and certainly not even an overwhelming majority. I would say a limited number, once they go through a debt management program where we go through and basically take over the payments of the person's credit card and reduce the interest rate and lower the payments by 30 to 50%, people go through that program, and it's, you know, typically a 3 to 4 year program. After spending 3 to 4 years with us, they pretty much don't want to do that again. And it's not because we're obnoxious, which I've been accused of before, but to my clients, I'm not. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's a hard program. It's a commitment. It's a long-term goal to be debt-free. They usually learn their lesson because we supplement it with education. However, some people obviously end up back in credit and credit hell, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that we need to go through, and hopefully, you know, we can break them of their bad habits. But, you know, if you live life for what it is and not try to be something that you're not, and if you have to use your credit cards and when the bill comes in, pay it off. Don't allow yourself to build up and get yourself in trouble before it's too late. I mean, if you sit there and spend what you can afford, you'll be fine. And I always use the old adage that if the money's not in your pocket, don't buy it.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of things I want to ask you, because I've been always curious about this. When you close down a credit card, for whatever reason, you decide that, hey, you know what? I have, you know, 15 MasterCards, and I probably don't need them. I can swing with 10. And you want to close down five. You want to close down one. Now, is there a particular way you need to do this? Do you need to call up and ask for them to put a voluntary termination or cancellation on the record, or is that automatic, or how does that work?
Well, you need to shut it down, and then it will report that it was closed by client or
and
by
customer. That's good, right?
That's better than the company saying you haven't used this credit card, and we're going to close it for you. That usually bodes better. However, most of the credit is scored electronically, and there's very little interaction. And to my knowledge, whether it's closed by the consumer or closed by the creditor, as long as the score, which is an R1 to an R9, is there, they go after that rather than who it was closed by. However, if you're looking at a more intense review of your credit, meaning if you're going for a home and not a home mortgage and not a credit card, there's going to be some probably human interaction. In fact, my wife was online, and she came to me and she said, "I just opened up a credit card, and it took me 30 seconds to be approved for this credit card." I go, "Great,
yeah, great.
When do you want to make your appointment with me?"
nice. What's this new book about? Power Up. Tell me a little bit about that.
Power Up is basically everything I've learned and more over the last 20 years of helping people get out of debt. What it is, it's not so much for the people that are in debt that need to figure out how to get out of debt. That was my first book, Credit Hell. This book, Power Up, is what happens after you've hit that wall or had to file bankruptcy, or basically, you know, you've made your mistakes, you had to pay off your debt over a course of time. What do you do so you don't make those same mistakes? And basically, it's more psychological. What should you think of? I have a chapter in the book that's who the hell are the Joneses, meaning keeping up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Why do we need to keep up with the Joneses? What's the mentality? You need to keep up with yourself rather than look at outside, externally. It gives you tips, and it talks about marketing, of consumer marketing and the theories behind that consumer marketing to make you want to buy. And it makes you, you know, when you'll be subject to that fantastic marketing of some of these advertisers, that maybe alarms will go off and say, "Oh, they're just trying to get me to buy this," rather than changing your psychology. Basically, it is a book that tells you, that makes you think about what you're doing so you don't get yourself in the same trouble that you once got yourself in. And let's face it, I would estimate 50% of America was impacted one way or the other by this recession. And my hope is, if I can change a tremendous amount of those people from repeating the same mistakes, then I did my job.
Yeah, so you're saying that, like, for example, when I go to the checkout line and they put the gum right at the right level for me to see it on the way out, right? Or those little cool little flashlight things, or the razors that I may need, you know, the advertising, the impulse things and all that. I should probably think about that before I just grab a whole handful of stuff.
They aren't there by accident.
Yeah.
You know, when you go through, and I love the holiday season because you go through and you have to work your way through a maze of, like, these add-ons for like $10 to get to the cash register, and you know, you go through and you pick up four things that you weren't expecting to buy, and all of a sudden you add another $40 to your bill. But the same thing.
There's no mistake that gumball machines are that height.
No, there aren't. And also, a pack of gum. I know you're about the same age as me. I mean, a pack of gum was 25, what was it, like 15 cents when we were growing up?
Yeah,
now it's
like
a dollar. And the only difference between the 25-cent pack of Wrigley's and the Wrigley's in the cool container is the container. It's the same gum, just formed differently.
Well,
and it's
I have a new love. I like these dessert gums. Who puts these things out? I got a pack right here. This is Extra, whoever, probably Wrigley. But let's see the back. You have to have very fine print here. Anyway, they have all these different gums. They have this, like, apple pie gum. They have a lemon chiffon gum. They have a chocolate chip mint. I'm waiting for the steak and potatoes gum. I figured, perfect. I'll just eat gum for lunch, and then I'll have a little dessert after, a little apple pie afterwards, and maybe even have like a little cappuccino flavored something after. There's a root beer float.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'll start serving that to my clients because some of these folks can't afford steak and potatoes anymore.
Yep,
They'll only be able to afford the gum. But the fact of the matter is, listen. People need to watch what they spend, need to think about every dollar they spend. And if they do that, then they're going to be in good shape. If they go out and spend recklessly, they're going to get themselves in trouble. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, people need to be aware that, you know, there's a lot that there's people out there that are a lot smarter than you and I that are trained to market to us, and their job is to separate us from our money, and they do a darn good job of that.
Yep. Now, when's your new book coming out? When's this next one coming out?
I believe it'll come out at the end of this month. It's Power Up by John Wiley and Company. It'll be available, I believe, in all the bookstores and on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Great. Well, we'll definitely put a link to that. Howard Fork and I very much appreciate you coming on, sharing some things. We really, like I said, we haven't talked about this topic because we're really usually hunkered down in what's going on with the markets, politics, and our just general disdain for the way that the Fed operates. So I appreciate you coming on board today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate
it. All right. Thanks. I think there's a lot of different opinion on what is happening in the credit cycle and in the world of credit, depending on, you know, things like where you live, what your job status is. So I think that some of the things that he talked about in terms of the housing market and, you know, making sure that you're set, I think that's some good advice and some good things that to take in. I'm gonna keep in touch with him because I want to find out, can I keep the finger on the pulse of real estate and credit? Because, you know, we're not going to see this amount of interest rate, well, lack of interest rates forever. And I think that it is very important to figure out when that cycle does turn. So we'll keep in touch with him on that. Now, I wanted to also focus in on some of the things that are going on. You know, we brilliantly, I think, invaded and got some of the folks that were involved in that whole massacre at the mall that we saw a few weeks ago. And, you know, the discussion now is that one of the reasons we went in, because, you know, this, well, how come we went in there, but we didn't go into Syria? You know, what's the differential? And what, you know, only a few people were killed there, which is terrible, but thousands were killed in Syria. And what's the difference? Well, you know, what? Well, one of the things that they talked about was, hey, isn't this interesting that they claim to be part of Al-Qaeda and made threats to the U.S.? And that then gives us the go ahead, the thumbs up, the green light. There's no line that we have to worry about crossing. It just is a fact. We go in with a couple of SEAL teams, get the guy we want, and it's all over. We'll see how that actually plays out right now, but that's good because one of the top guys of the Al-Qaeda was actually captured, killed, whatever exactly went on there, and one of the groups that went into another facility weren't as successful. But I wonder how we are going to take that. With the combination of the budget battle being absolutely nowhere, neither side budging, what's going to happen with markets? You know, we're seeing on the futures overnight, they dropped down a little after the close on Friday. They're starting to come in a little bit on Sunday night. But the question is going to be is how fed up are investors going to be with the shenanigans that are going on in Washington? That's really going to be the big issue there. Now, I did want to tell you about a few things. You know, this is great. This is just a great story. There's a stock, and the company's name is, I believe it's Tweeter Home Entertainment. Tweeter Home Entertainment. And their symbol is TWTRQ. Now, that's very similar to Twitter. You get the same kind of name. And their symbol when they come out is going to be supposedly slated for TWTR with no Q. Very similar, but different. Well, on Friday, it seemed that someone thought maybe they'll get a jump on the deal. Somehow, the symbol was really going to be Twitter, maybe. And that stock rode up as high as about 1,200% from about a penny. This is a bankrupt company, by the way. That's what they got the Q for. Maybe somebody thought it was the quote. I don't know. But that stock ran up about 1,200%. It came way down, finished up at up 600% for the day until they probably halted it. There was a lot of million shares traded. I don't know what that was all about, if it was one person or it was some kind of crazy newsletter publication that came out with, hey, here's something for you. I got Twitter early. I don't know, but it's kind of funny if you think about it. Wow. That they thought they would get into the stock before it actually even came public and before any of their filings were approved. I thought that was pretty funny. I got a good chuckle out of that. So take a look at that chart, TWTRQ, which you won't see it moving that way ever again, I am certain, except down. I mentioned that we have a webinar coming up on Tuesday. Now, if you have not participated in these webinars, they're geared for people that are looking at technical indications. Yeah, we'd like to see the technicals and the quantitative and the fundamentals. But we're really focusing in on the technicals right now for a lot of different reasons, because this market really begs to have a good knowledge of the technical indicators, because it really is very technically trading. The second thing is that we wanted to share with you some of these algorithms that we built that were available on TradeStation now. And actually, you know what? We just finished up very, very close to finishing up, 99.9%. We just have to take it through a little bit of a trial testing and try to break it as best as we can to make sure it doesn't, and then we'll release it on TradeStation. That's the KRI indicator, the key reversal indicator, which I talk about quite often. We actually took that and took all of our calculations and ported it over to TradeStation, and we actually have some really neat features in there. We have not only the trend, we also have a really great gradient. We have alerts that are on there. We also have a gauge, if you will, that goes from a -7 to a +7 to give you a visual of exactly where it is. And this also has some additional calculations in there that shows clustering and a few other things when the reversal is really imminent. And that's when things get pretty ugly on the upside, where there's just an absolute crazy amount of buying going on to a level of absurdity, or they're selling out of fear that's going on to a level of ridiculousness. And one of the things that I wanted to do there was to go back and test it, and test out great, because these are short-term signals of a contrarian reversal trend. So if you're in a trend that's moving up and you get that spike up because of just some incredible buying that went on and a lot of other things, there's not just that. A lot of other things that go into this, the potential for a reversal is very high. As a matter of fact, we got a cluster and we got a signal on that Thursday that Bernanke came out with his lack of cutting back any kind of bonds, lack of tapering, and that so far was a perfect signal recently. There's others that you got to see on this. So we're going to, I may talk about that a little bit during the webinar, but we're also going to talk about the autopilot and how actually to really figure out where the buying and the selling levels are and where you should set your stops, and talk about the whole series. So it's a half hour or so. If you want to join, go over to triggercharts.com. I'll put a link also on the Disciplined Investor on this show notes. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see information about that as well. Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. And you can sign up for it. It's free. Just come along. It's a live deal we do right then and there. And you see it on your screen through the magic of television, magic of internet, and follow along what we're doing. And then, of course, if you want, replays, we have those available too. As a matter of fact, all the replays are on triggercharts.com. You can go to the video section and check out the last several webinars we did. But I really do encourage you to check it out, because it may be something you've never seen before. And if you haven't seen the charts that we're talking about and the way that we're doing this, I promise you, you have never seen the kind of things we're showing you. Now let's kind of move away and talk about Tesla for a second. I thought this was cool. So there was a last week there was a hint from a short seller. You know, these are the hedge funds or newsletter writers, mostly newsletter writers, that come out again. They're looking for problems. They're looking for issues, right? They're looking for the holes in the story. And when they latch on to one sometimes, boom, it moves the stock down pretty significantly. I think I mentioned this to you about Questcor. I think we did, where I really liked the stock, but I said, you know, the stock is up 100%. Recently, we cut our position down to very little because at any given time, this stock could just drop 10%, you know, by the time you blink. And that's because there's a few short sellers that we know about that are on this stock. And there's a variety of other ones that they're on that they'll drop down real hard and try to figure out where the stops are and cascade the stock down. And that doesn't mean that you should stay away from that stock. Just be aware that it is volatile. And Questcor has done that a few times, but it's at a, you know, close to an all-time high again. Now, they came out with a story about a week ago, a week and a half ago, that there was something about Tesla. And they talked about how there was a feeling in their firm that, you know, we're not going to talk about shorting them for a while, but, you know, there's going to be a day that there's a potential. And they really didn't want to short, and they weren't going to put out a story for a while because they thought the stock was running and had the opportunity to run for a lot of reasons. Okay. So what happened was that they finally decided, you know what, we're going to put out something about this, and it's getting to be time to short the stock. We think this really has some significant downside. So they put out the story, a little hint about it to their clients and all. Stock comes in a little bit, nothing major, and goes back up. And then miraculously, we have that incident, right? That car fire that was taken with the phone camera, the iPhone, or whatever they used to take the videos of the Tesla. People freaked out because it was just like burning uncontrollably, and there was some rumor that it was the battery, and the battery caused an extra, you know, extra heat. It was crazy stuff that they were talking about. And the stock dropped about 4%, then the next day about 5, 6%, dropped to its support level on a weekly basis when it comes to the indicators we use. I mean, it was a perfect. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine said to me, hey, Andrew, where's the price for Tesla? I said, well, if you're going to buy Tesla, this is about 3 weeks ago, if you're going to buy Tesla, I wait for it to pull back to about 170 and a half. So we got that. I think he put the trade in, actually. Now, here's the point of all this. What was great about what Elon Musk did was that he came out and defended the situation, explained it, and he did it in a way that I thought was pretty interesting. He sent an email. I got an email. I don't know. Maybe I'm on a mailing list for Tesla, I guess. A few people I know got emails. You probably got an email. I mean, massive email that went out from Elon Musk a day later trying to explain what happened and going over what was the real story and clarifying all the issues that were out there. Now, what was great about that was this is classic relationship building and customer service at its best. You get in front of something as best as you can. You know, be legit about it, of course. But you get in front of the situation and you tell the truth. So we know we got in front of the situation. Let's assume for a second he told the truth, okay? Versus what would happen if, or what has happened in the past with companies that we've seen situations where the, I was thinking it was the Pinto and the AMC Pacer and a few other cars that had those rear gasoline fires and if you hit them wrong and all that. And they basically people were crapped upon. I mean, they had so many of those to prove the situation. Or do you remember when we had the failing brakes or the sudden acceleration problem? You know, nobody would believe these people. And basically, the companies kept on trying to press down all of the information that was coming out about it, trying to squash it as best as possible. Reminds me of what happened in Fukushima with Japan. They're still doing it. You know, denying that there was any problem, denying any radiation leakage, denying that there would be any particles that were released in the ocean. And all of those were a lie. In fact, they lied about the nuclear meltdown that occurred there. They lied about everything. Now, that's what goes on a lot of times in companies. What they do is they, you know, something happens and they try to suppress it. This was very classy. This was way up there on the classy scale. Putting out a letter, putting out an email, going above and beyond, not just to customers, but just to maybe he got the global email list or something. I don't know what he did, but he blasted out very quickly a letter. And that is a really good thing to say about management. And I really respect him for that. And I got a lot of calls, people saying, did you get this letter? Did you get this letter? Yeah, I did. And everybody that I talked to was like, wow, that's impressive. So I don't know if you got one, but I don't know what you think about that. I just thought it was kind of cool. Now, whether or not Tesla does have a problem or if their situation with their batteries, whatever, again, it was just a really classy thing to do and the right thing to do. And it kind of shows that, you know, this is above the level of business as usual. And I just thought I'd kind of mention that. I thought it was really cool. Anyway, that's about all I have. Let's see if I have anything on my list here that's left. We did have some questions that came in. I know that you could write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com at any given time. I guess not. Well, I have them here somewhere. If you do want to write me, please do. askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And, of course, DH Unplugged this week. We have a stock that is closing. I think it's Boeing. And we can win prize. Actually, we gave away a free month to Trigger Point Research, the pro subscription, last week. And we have some good things to give away. We have some other stocks coming up. All you have to do is guess the price. That is the stock of the week. And you also can win. And if you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, it's kind of a hoot because we just talk about all sorts of great stuff. Business and sometimes non-business related. But John, you can ask John Dvorak anything, and he knows, which is amazing. I try to stump him all the time, and it's just a lot of fun. That comes out on Wednesdays. You can get that at iTunes, just like you can this particular podcast. I want to thank you so much for joining me. And we are lined up with guests for the next, I think, 2 months. So we're pretty much solidly booked with some pretty good names. We do have Frank Herzio coming back, of course. We get him every month and a half or 2 months to talk about what's going on in his neck of the woods. We also have John Perkins coming on. And I think that's coming up next week, where he, you know, he's the guy that wrote the fascinating books about the whole idea that everything that went on in the world in terms of when he was involved in the, I don't know, the NSA, the CIA, whatever he was involved in, it was all about oil. And we went into countries and did all we could to extract as much oil from them as we could by promising them all sorts of infrastructure. And then we pretty much charged them an arm and a leg for the loans. And the concept of what are we doing and why does everybody hate us kind of has some clarity when you think of it that way. But we'll talk to him about some of the things that are going on in his world and bring that right to you. Thanks for joining me. Stop by thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check it out. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.